This is 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and this is a special program for me, a chance to relive some wonderful childhood memories of my family, gathered around a floor-model Zenith TV and watching the antics of Red Skelton. We laughed at Red's many comic roles as the punch-drunk boxer, Cauliflower McPug, the dim-witted country bumpkin, Clem Cladiddlehopper. Did I say that right? Cladiddlehopper? Sheriff Deadeye, the hapless hobo, Freddy the Freeloader, and of course the wisecracking seagulls, Gertrude and Heathcliff. Great fun the whole family could enjoy. My folks were from Vincennes, where Red was from. Red grew up there, and the city celebrates its native son with the Red Skelton Museum of American Comedy. It's on the campus of Vincennes University. Long intro. My guest is the museum's executive director, Ann Pratt. Ann, welcome.
Thank you so much.
This is going to be fun. Now, Ann, for our younger listeners, let's introduce them to Red Skelton, who is an American treasure, a Renaissance guy, really.
Absolutely. Red, he could do anything. It's like I try to explain to my own children who are too young to remember Red. You know, it's like thinking of somebody who can sing, who can dance, who is funny. But not just that, but he can paint, and he's an author, and he even composed hundreds and hundreds of songs. So really, you know, the term Renaissance man is fitting for Red.
Well, now, he grew up in Vincennes. I mean, it's your native son. I know you're from Vincennes, too, so you're very proud of Richard Red Skelton. Tell us about his early life in Vincennes, Ann.
Well, he was born the fourth son of actually a single mom. By the time Red was born, his father had passed away. But the family was very poor at that point. The mom took in laundry to help raise the boys, and Red actually got a job, you know, all kinds of jobs. If you take a little tour through Vincennes, he worked at a bowling alley setting up pins, and he worked at JCPenney's breaking down boxes. But probably his most favorite job was selling newspapers in front of the Pantheon Theater on Main Street.
That's right. I saw some early some Facebook posts from folks who have kind of remembrance of Red. It says, my aunt knew him growing up and was told he was a kind of a scamp. Her sister dated him and said he would come to her house with flowers from someone else's garden.
I think that's probably true. True story there. Yes, I think, you know, he didn't have much money, but he was born very close in age to my grandmother. And she would tell stories about him just performing on street corners. She grew up in the north end of town where Red grew up, and it was kind of the poor end of town, and he'd just be doing silly stuff, just enjoyed making people laugh.
And I think one of the places he lived on 12th Street, somebody said. And he was a paper boy. You mentioned that, and mentioned the family had to kind of scramble to pay the bills and put food on the table.
They did. They moved around a lot. I mean, Red's birthplace is right across the street from the museum on Lindale. And, you know, they've got an Indiana historic marker out in front of the house now. But really, Red was born there. He didn't grow up there because their family was so poor. They were always moving around, different houses, different relatives, you know, just like you said, putting food on the table. And it was, you know, depression time when Red was growing up. And it was hard for everyone, but especially a single mom with four young boys.
Now, so Red was born in 1913, I believe. Okay. So, and I guess we want to go back to how he got involved in show business. You said he used to like to make people laugh.
He did make people laugh. And Red tells a story, and Red likes to preface his stories with, if you want a great story, ask me. If you want the truth, ask Edna. Edna was his first wife and his business partner and business manager, and Red loves a good story. So he might embellish a little bit, but he told this story often, and it's from a time when he was 10 years old, selling newspapers on the street corner in front of the Pantheon Theater at 4th and Main Street in Vincennes. And he said he was there selling the newspapers, and a very fine-dressed man came by and asked if he was going to go to the show that evening at the Pantheon, and Red said, No, I'd like to, but, you know, I've got to finish selling my papers, and we can't afford that show. And so the man gave him a dollar, which at that time bought all the rest of Red's papers, and said, well, if you come to the show tonight, there'll be a ticket waiting for you. Well, Red said he ran home and told his mom, and she was so excited, and said he even gave him a nickel for popcorn. But he went on back to the theater that evening, and sure enough, there was a ticket, and he was sitting up there in the balcony, and he says when those curtains opened, he started hitting the person next to him with his elbow. That's him, that's him, that's my friend. Well, the headliner of the show that evening was comedian Ed Wynn, who also happened to be the fancy-dressed man who came by and bought Red's papers. So at intermission, Ed invited Red back to see behind the scenes, and Red said he held him up there to the curtains, and he peeked out there at the audience, and Red said right then is when he knew that's what he wanted to do, was to make people laugh. And he really credits that with his love for show business and wanting to be on the air and or at that time wasn't on the air, but just traveling around vaudeville, and because that's really where he got his start.
That's what we want to say. It was a vaudeville performance where Edwin was the headliner, and they had other acts, of course, too, like probably a magician and
absolutely,
maybe another
right.
comic and maybe an acrobat or two.
I know. You never knew what was going to come across the stage. But it's interesting because at that time, you know, there wasn't radio and there wasn't television. And so people couldn't just sit in their homes and be entertained. You actually had to go out to a live performance. And Vincennes being a river town, there was a lot of traffic through there. And it was a kind of a hub for some of the entertainment. So Red got to see a lot in his young years. And eventually, when he was about 13 or 14, he headed off with a traveling vaudeville troupe and started to make his way in the world.
Now, he also performed in circuses, is that right?
He didn't perform in circuses necessarily. He did when he was older, but he loved the circus. He loved clowns. Clowns loved him. His mom, you know, his father passed away before he was born, and his mom always told him stories, and people would tell him stories about his father working with the circus. But as we've done a little research at the museum, our curator, Mark Kratzner, did some extensive research, and it seems that perhaps his father would help with circuses when they came through town. And so, and his mother was a seamstress and a laundress, and so she would help with the costumes and the clothing. And so they were sort of involved in that way with the circus. But Red was good friends with Emmett Kelly, and he would love to go to circuses and just, I think he did perform, like I said, when he was older with some of the circus troupes, just like as a special guest performer as Red Skelton, the famous comedian, but not coming up. He wasn't with the circus.
Well, again, you know, like the clowns were kind of the rock stars of the circus, because the circus, when a circus came to town, they'd march the elephants down Main Street. The whole town would stop and go out and look and then follow them out to the circus grounds, to the big top.
I know. And I just speaking of that, there's on the American Experience here on public television, there's a new series, I guess, coming out called The Circus. And it's just going to be so exciting this fall, because when I was reading about this, it just talks about that exact same thing. The circus just shut the town down for a day. I mean, everybody was just enthralled. It was like Christmas or anything else. It was circus day. And I think that is kind of what we're talking about. Old-time entertainment was just so, so big in towns.
So when did Red make the big jump from the vaudeville circuit to the big time in radio?
He started in Chicago with a radio show in the 1940s, early 1940s, and he became kind of popular. He did his Dunkin' Donuts routine, which is one thing he's famous for, just different ways to dunk a donut, and that kind of picked up. Well, he did that with the vaudeville, but then also with the radio, and that's where he started to create his characters, and his radio show got very big, and then actually, most people think he went straight from radio to television, but he was actually a film star kind of in between those two with MGM. He made, I think, 47 feature films throughout his career, which is a lot. Most of them comedies, a couple of dramas. I think one called The Clown was more of a drama. But he had the foresight when he signed with MGM to put a clause into his contract, because as you know, at that time, if you signed with a movie studio, you were exclusive. Mm-hmm. You didn't do a movie for somebody else. It's like, this was what you did. That if he chose, he could also do a TV show, work in television, because he could see it coming that television was going to be the new medium. And so he had that in his clause with the movie company. And so then he did continue. In 1951 is when he started his television show, and it ran for 20 years, but he did it, you know, coinciding with his movie career for a while, and then eventually he transitioned.
Well, Red, also a smart businessman.
He was
obviously
a smart businessman. And it's just, I think about all the technology we have now, you know, all the latest and greatest cell phones and Apple Watches and all these things. And Red would have been so on that bandwagon. When you look at what he saved, every newest recording device or camera or any type of new thing technology-wise, Red was right there at the start of it, you know, being in on it. So I know that he would have really enjoyed the technology of today.
My guest is Ann Pratt. She's the executive director of the Red Skelton Museum of American Comedy on the campus of Vincennes University. So let's talk about the museum a bit now. Do you have a favorite display at the museum, Ann?
I do. I like, I love the characters. I've seen the movie a million times, and every single time we have a short film, about 10 minutes when you come in, and every single time I see it, it chokes me up a little bit. It's so poignant, and I just think it really tells the story of Red as far as I like that feature of the museum. But the Pledge of Allegiance, that's another one mm-hmm. that I love that exhibit.
And it we will talk about that later because the special anniversary is coming
it
up.
It is,
about,
but that's probably one of my favorite exhibits.
Well, I think that, is that what you get the feedback from your visitors? Do they like
they
that
They do
one,
love or? The Pledge, and we have an interactive one called, I'm trying to think what the name – a clown's dressing room. The name of the exhibit is a clown's dressing room, and guests can sit down at a dressing table and actually take their own picture and put virtual makeup on their face. And then when they finish and look up in the mirror, that virtual makeup will be on their face. And that's probably visitors – especially younger kids, love that exhibit.
Well, I think that's what you want. You want not just the older folks who remember it, Red, on television and in the movies. You want a new generation to appreciate the life of Red Skelton.
We do. That's really part of our mission.
Yeah. Now, he has a lot of paintings, and I know you some are on display, and you got others in the storeroom.
We do. You got to see that, didn't you?
Uh-huh. He was prolific.
He was, and just always working on honing his craft. When we look at so many of the unfinished pieces that we have, and the sketches, and the the ones he did on napkins, linen napkins, while he's traveling on an airplane, he just worked and worked and worked on doing things. And like I said, he would go back and work on them again. And I know Mrs. Skelton has many, many more of his very exquisite works that she still has in her collection that we'll have one day at the museum.
Now, you're talking about Lothian?
Lothian Skelton. She's the third Mrs. Skelton.
Still alive?
Still alive. She was 25 years younger than Red, and she comes several times a year to Vincennes. She really thinks of it as her second home now and says that her mission in life is just to see the museum be successful. And she's so pleased and just so excited to come visit.
Well, tell us about Ann Pratt. How does Ann Pratt get involved with the Red Skelton Museum of American Comedy?
I know. It was really not on my career path. I was kind of a lifelong educator. I'd been a teacher and a librarian, school librarian and a principal. But I was working on my doctorate and I had to have a project. And so I was asked to join the board of the Red Skelton Museum, which wasn't even a museum at the time. It was just kind of a fundraising effort trying to get the museum. We had the Performing Arts Center. And I was on the education committee to think of ways that we could relate this to younger people and how this could be an educational opportunity. And as such, I really fell in love with the project. And then when they decided to hire a person to kind of work with the marketing and work with some grant writing with the Lilly Foundation, they hired me in 2011, and that's kind of been it. We opened the museum in 2013, so I was part of the team that helped to get the museum open, and it's really been fun to see something kind of evolve from the ground up and be a part of that.
And you have connection, too, because you are a native of Vincennes.
I am. I grew up in Vincennes, went away to college, and I was gone for about 25 years, and then when I came back in 2007, I was working there, but just being back in Vincennes and seeing how Vincennes is becoming such a tourist destination made this museum just so exciting with, the Military Museum and the George Rogers Clark National Historical Park and Grouseland and the state sites. Now we really are becoming a destination, and it's just been fun to be a part of that development in Southern Indiana and see how exciting it is for people who travel and like, wow, we had no idea this was so cool in this part of the country, because literally we've keeping track of people on a map of where the, and every single state has been represented by visitors to the museum, which is so exciting. And just many, many people every year, 95% of our visitors are not from Vincennes. And so it's great to see this, this broad range of people from all over the country who love Red Skelton, who want to come and see his legacy.
We are talking to Ann Pratt, the executive director of the Red Skelton Museum of American Comedy. Now, coming up, we're going to talk about Red's affection for his hometown of Vincennes, more about his paintings, his movies, and what you'll see at the Museum of American Comedy. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and my guest is Ann Pratt, a very enthusiastic executive director of the Red Skelton Museum of American Comedy in Red's hometown of Vincennes, Indiana. We were talking earlier about Red's paintings. Of course, did he always paint clowns, or does he have other subjects?
He mostly painted clowns. There are a few other things, you know, that he does, but that was really his love. His love was clowns. He loved painting clowns. And what was so cool is he might paint famous people as clowns.
Okay.
And he didn't always say, oh, that's Henry Fonda or that's, you know, Carol Burnett. But you could tell. And I think that was one of those things that people enjoyed doing with Red's paintings. And I did a little bit of research online, and there's one site that I found that sort of says this painting of Red's is this person, and said Red never said that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I look at him, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's right. Those do look like those people. And there's some of his very famous paintings that when you really take a look at him, if someone says, oh, that is supposed to be Lucille Ball or Carol Burnett or Phyllis Diller or whoever it is, people from his era, he painted a lot, but they always were in clown.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't really look like themselves, but they had either the clown makeup on or a clown costume. But through the eyes or the jawline or something, you're like, you're right. That's who
is. That's Red's joke. I'm sure.
I think it is. It's just
a little bit of
his humor. I mean, I think Red must have been a genius.
Mm-hmm.
He made it through the eighth grade. That was the limit of his formal schooling. But as Lothian, we talked about Lothian, Mrs. Skelton earlier. She said he really never slept. He would just take one of those little catnap kind of people. He
mm-hmm.
would be up all night either painting or working. He wrote letters and journals all the time and reviewed tapes of his shows. He loved to hear where the laughs came, laughs were, you know, maybe. And she said sometimes, you know, he was very important to him that his humor was clean.
Mm-hmm.
And she said sometimes if something that was a little maybe on the fence got too big of a laugh,
mm-hmm.
he might take it out, thinking, well, that might have been just a little too off color. So that was important to him that
sure.
he stayed clean and that and judging what got the biggest laughs.
Well, he's kind of a symbol of family entertainment. Now, back to the paintings. Did he have any formal training to be an artist?
He did not. He did not have any formal training. I think the earliest painting date that I saw was early 1940s. So, I mean, that's pretty mm-hmm. far back. I'm thinking that he would have been, you know, 30 years old, not even
sure.
maybe 30 years old. And I think he used it as a way to relax. He just started.
Mm-hmm.
And most of his work was done either with colored pencil or with acrylics. A lot of his, I think he would start with the colored pencil and then sometimes complete it or do another version in the oils or acrylics. But
now, when visitors to the museum will see these paintings.
They absolutely will. We always have, you know, 8 to 12 on display, always. We have probably, I don't know, 300 maybe,
really?
Originals. And, you know, like I said, some are unfinished, some are unframed. We're working now in the archives. We just got several more from Mrs. Skelton to kind of organize them by subject matter or by the way the medium that they're used and things like that. So we're working on even more types of ways to display the paintings.
Now, how long has the Museum of American Comedy been open?
5 years.
Really?
We opened on July 18th, 2013, which was the 100th anniversary of Red's birth. It was really important that we opened on that day. And so it was kind of a push to the finish. And we opened then, and now we just had our fifth anniversary.
Was Lothian there for the grand opening?
She was there for the grand opening, and Red's daughter, Valentina, who lives in Northern California, she's a bit reclusive. We were so excited that she did make the journey. It had been 25 years since she'd been on an airplane.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can imagine the changes to air travel
since
she traveled in the 70s or whatever, and now she traveled. But it was hard for her. But she came, and it was just exciting to get to meet Valentina and Lothian. That was the first time I had met either of them.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, I've met Mrs. Skelton Lothian many, many times. But it was a big deal.
Now, Red had two children?
Yes, Richard and Valentina, born in 1947 and 1948. And his son Richard, unfortunately, passed away of leukemia at the age of 10. And when he got the diagnosis, and at that time it just was not a curable type of illness, Red and his family began a world tour because he just wanted Richard to have as many opportunities as he could. And we even have pictures of him in Rome, Italy, with the Pope, you know, getting a blessing from the Pope. And it was a hard, hard, sad time for Red,
mm-hmm.
but I'm glad that they did have that opportunity to visit. And Red loved to travel. You can tell that with some of the other exhibits that we have.
Now, Valentina, you mentioned her. Was she involved in showbiz in any way at all?
Not really. She was not. There's a bit of I see a couple of clips where she would like come onto Red's show, both as a tiny little girl and then as a teen, and maybe do a bit here and there. But I think just she maybe didn't enjoy the show business world that much. You know, maybe when you grow up in that, because that would have been quite the heyday of Hollywood through the 50s, 60s, and 70s. I think maybe she just stepped away.
Now, when visitors go into the museum, there's this splash of color everywhere. I kind of likened it to like a going into like a circus. You have the 10-minute film. You have interactive displays. The create your own clown face. That's a popular thing. You also have a joke box.
We do. We have a joke box. And the museum kind of goes chronologically. There's a big timeline at the front that, you know, you can read to see the details of Red's life. And then it goes through his time with vaudeville and radio. And then in the feature films. And there's a joke box. And Red typed all his jokes into these little tiny notebooks. And they were all categorized by category, I guess, like jokes about family and jokes about animals and jokes about your wife. And it's just so funny. They're alphabetical in these categories, you know, so he must have had to type these books up all the time, or somebody typed them.
Right.
But we replicated those big so people could see some of his jokes written down. But then there's also a box that when you lift the lid, you hear Red's voice telling some of his jokes. And every time you lift it, you get a different joke.
And also movie posters.
Right.
I found those fascinating.
Oh, I know. I love movie posters anyway. And some of these are so cool. And then you can show some of them are in foreign languages where Red's films have been translated into Spanish or something else to be shown in Europe. And so those are neat, too, to see.
Now, some of the movies, I know I looked online. Fuller Brush Man, Ziegfeld Follies.
Right.
He was in Neptune's Daughter with Esther Williams.
I know. That's a funny one. He joins sort of a, I can't think what those girls are called, that do like the water ballet. Like those girls. And it's a picture of him. You know, he does that with one of them. And Whistling in Brooklyn, there's a whistling series. It's kind of a mystery where he's kind of a madcap.
He's a detective.
Right.
The Fox.
Right, exactly. And that was a very popular one of his. And one he did with Lucille Ball was called Three Little Words. And those were, you know, he had a few. I wouldn't say he's like a giant movie star, but he had definitely had some successful movies. I think Fuller Brush Man was probably one of the biggest successes. And then, of course, now with, you know, the popularity of Lucy and everything, the Three Little Words and the Whistling series are probably his biggest ones.
Well, that was in the heyday of Hollywood where they were cranking out movies all
the
time because people went to the movies.
Right.
And there was like a different one every weekend people would go see and double features. So they had to have content.
I know. There was just not really television. We have one fact on our timeline, and I may not get the years exactly right, but it's like in 1951, like 30% of households had TVs. And like 4 years later, 90% of households had TV. So there was this huge curve of when TV first came and then when it just blasted into the sky of popularity.
And Red was right there when
he
it started.
He was. He was right there
the
when
ground
it started.
Floor.
Ground floor. And his show was just iconic. I mean, people talk about it. And that's one of the things that we're talking about doing this fall at the museum is Red Skelton was on Tuesday nights. So one Tuesday night a month in our little theater in the museum, we're going to show an episode, an hour-long episode of a Red Skelton show. So, and they're not really, the full episodes, many, many of them have never been released. But we, of course, as a museum, we have copies of them. And so people will be able to come to the museum on Tuesday night, just like in the past, and watch a Red Skelton show.
Oh, nostalgic. I love it. Now, talk about Red's love for his hometown. I know he would come back to Vincennes often.
He did. He came back fairly often. And in 1964, he started the Red Skelton Needy Children's Clothing Fund. And that's still going on today. And that's, he did a big benefit at Adams Coliseum, which is a big basketball arena in downtown Vincennes, raised, I think, $10,000 at that time. And then he matched it. So they had this seed money of $20,000. And that's in a fund. And every year, these children are bought new things. And Red was fairly specific about what should be purchased for children. And one of them was a coat and socks and underwear, because apparently he just thought those were things that were, he'd love to have new underwear and new socks. And maybe as the fourth boy, that didn't happen all
sure.
that often.
He probably got hand-me-downs if he got those even.
Right. So, you know, we work with the Children and Family Services and with the schools to get names. And there's an executor of that that fund that still helps with that today.
Now, there's a bridge named in Red's honor.
Mm-hmm. Goes from Indiana into Illinois, basically, is the Red Skelton Bridge. And I can't remember if that was 63 or 64 when it opened, somewhere in that time frame, but Red famously went out there for the dedication, and everybody's on there and clapping, and they cut the ribbon, and Red's like, okay, thanks for coming, now get off my bridge, which is just so typical.
Yeah,
Red Skelton, you know, has to have a little quip.
Sure. Now, I understand he went to Lincoln High School and signed yearbooks one time.
He did. He was made an honorary graduate, the class of 1969, so his 50th anniversary is coming up.
That's right.
That's funny. Might have to represent him in the high school parade there, because, you know, homecoming is pretty big in Vincennes.
And also, Red loved Christmas.
He did love Christmas. And
Who doesn't?
He's painted several Santa Claus paintings, and we have turned some of his Santa Claus paintings into Christmas cards that you can buy at our museum store, and we always put them out, and we have some of his handmade ornaments that they look like they were probably made in the 70s. They're kind of that felt and sequins look, and Lothian said that December 1st, he would just be all in on Christmas, you know, from then on, and we'd have a new one of our Red Skelton statues was just completed in a Christmas theme, and I love it.
Now, also, Red loved Charlie Chaplin.
He did. Well, he did love Charlie Chaplin, and he also bought Charlie Chaplin's Theater in Los Angeles. And that is where he did, you know, some of his filming of his stuff. He bought that theater. And so after he sold the theater, which is now owned by the Muppet Company, Jim Henson's Muppet Company now owns the theater that was Charlie Chaplin's, then Red Skelton's, and now the Muppets. So I don't know what that says, one of the first donations made to the museum were these huge concrete slabs that were cut out of the sidewalk in front of that theater. And in those are Charlie Chaplin's feet prints, Red Skelton's footprints in his Freddy the Freeloader shoes, because you can see the holes in the bottom of the shoes, and then his buddy Ed Wynn, that we talked about with the Pantheon Theater, his feet prints as well. So it's kind of a nice connection that
we have.
They're in the lobby of the Performing Arts Center.
Of course, Charlie Chaplin, a lot of slapstick humor, and Red was very physical in his humor.
Absolutely. You know, and that it did take a toll on his body. You know, older years, we have, which is kind of strange, I guess, but we have these huge leg braces that he would have to wear, you know, to complete some of his performances in later years, because he was just so much falling down and all those sorts of things that it just took its toll eventually.
A pratfall, maybe?
Absolutely.
Sorry.
I know. That's why I fall down so much.
There you go. I was working on that. So my guest is Anne Pratt. She's the executive director of the Red Skelton Museum of American Comedy on the campus of Vincennes University. And coming up, we're going to talk about the 50th anniversary of Red's Patriotic Pledge of Allegiance recital on his TV show, and why younger generations need to know more about the life and legacy of Red Skelton. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. My guest goes to work surrounded by the images of one of America's greatest entertainers. Anne Pratt is the executive director of the Red Skelton Museum of American Comedy in Red's hometown of Vincennes, Indiana. So, Anne, you are literally surrounded and at times inundated with Red Skelton memorabilia, and more keeps coming in.
It does. And that's what's so exciting about my job is every day we find something new in the collection that didn't even know that we had, because, you know, we have our initial collection from Mrs. Skelton, and just the process of getting through the boxes and getting them categorized. And, you know, thank goodness I have an incredible staff. You know, Mark Kretzner and Grady Dixon and the people that I work with are so good to take care of these things. But Mrs. Skelton last February sent us, she's been working on kind of condensing. She'll be 81 this year, which she always is like, don't tell people how old I am. I'm like, who cares? But and she's been kind of condensing. And so as she gathers things, she either sends them in the mail, or last year a giant truck came and 500 boxes were taken off. We have a huge, we call it the Reducation Room. It's kind of a big classroom in the museum. And the entire thing was filled, like probably 6 feet tall all the way down with boxes from this donation. donation.
And now, these would be like TV scripts?
Yes, there's some notes, TV scripts. Whatever. There's a collection of canes, a collection of little clown dolls, some paintings. I mean, Red kept everything. It was kind of that generation, that Depression-era generation, I've decided mm-hmm. were hoarders, yeah. for lack of a better word.
Sure,
but they really kept everything. And it's to our benefit because sure. just – receipts and signed interesting things. Like the other day, because we have so many of the boxes of things from the TV shows, we have signed contracts from guest stars, and Mark Kressner the other day found the signed contract when the Rolling Stones were guest stars. And so all four of their signatures wow. are on the on a contract
the
that
Rolling
we have.
The Rolling Stones were on the Red Skelton show?
I know, well. Right?
That's really a mix of culture there. That's
right,
good stuff.
Right. But, you know, the 60s, I guess,
sure.
you know, whatever.
Now, we have this big event coming up in 2019, the 50th anniversary of Red's Pledge of Allegiance. And that was a monologue at the end of one of his shows. And he also mentioned Harrison School, where he was a student.
Yes, he was.
And he mentioned his principal's name, I think, too.
Mr. Lasswell. Mm-hmm. That's right. And oftentimes he was the principal and he was also a teacher, because oftentimes principals were teachers as well. And the Harrison School is still standing. It just went through a big renovation. Now it's called Tecumseh Harrison because another school, Tecumseh, they merged. Mm-hmm. But it's just about four blocks from the museum, which is kind of neat. Everything, just his birthplace, his elementary school, they're all right there. But he credits this teacher. Red read it for the first time on his TV show on January 14th, 1969. And in this Pledge of Allegiance, his teacher explained each word of the Pledge of Allegiance. And then so Red, you know, recreated this for the TV audience. And it just, at a time when maybe patriotism wasn't at a high level during the 60s, during the Vietnam War, it really brought this sense of patriotism and love of country, and that was important to Red. I mean, it really, really was. He was a true patriot, and that was just kind of was a feel-good sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, he did serve in the military.
He did serve in the military. He,
World War II.
Served in World War II. He was drafted, and he went in, and he served for about a year before he left. And during that time, he was very, very busy. One of his duties was mainly entertaining the troops. But he did eventually get a medical discharge, mainly due to exhaustion and with all this performing day after day after day. But then he continued to go back and entertain the troops throughout his career. He'd go back to different bases, you know, a la Bob Hope type of thing, and do those types of shows.
Now, what have you got planned for the anniversary of the Pledge of Allegiance?
We're still working on plans for that, but we're wanting to do something, you know, some type of show. We're working on who's going to come and that sort of thing with January 14th on the actual anniversary. And then at other patriotic type of holidays throughout the year, we're looking at something for Flag Day on June 14th. We're going to have an entry in the 4th of July parade and some different things as the year progresses that we're going to be doing with, you know, celebrating that 50-year anniversary of the pledge.
Now, of course, 1969, like you said, was a very turbulent time in the country. A lot of cynicism. People were split. The nation was split. And I think Red wanted to unite people. And I think this, I know I've seen that pledge several times and everything. And there's a patriotic feel there, too. But it's a kind of a way of bringing everybody together. This is where we came from, folks. This is what
right.
we endured over the years. And let's all come together as one.
Right.
And I think that was Red's message.
I do. And I think in the time we're in now, where people are a bit politically split right now, mm-hmm. I think that this is a great time to have this 50th anniversary and bring this type of, you know, we all love the country. Whoever you want to vote for, everybody is proud to be American. And I think that that's what this says. And I hope that this is a good timing and we can really let more and more people who maybe haven't heard this Pledge of Allegiance hear it and feel the importance of the words.
Mm-hmm. And also he mentioned that he hoped the One Nation Under God reference would be retained.
Right. It's interesting because, like Red said, when he was in school, when he was in the fifth grade, he said since, you know, he first learned this pledge, two words have been added to the pledge and two states have been added to the Union, because mm-hmm. he heard this, I think, 1948 or 40, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But so Hawaii and Alaska, of course, sure. were added to the Union, and they added the words under God to the pledge. And at the time, there was a big controversy about prayer in school. And I know in the last line of Red's commentary, he says, two states have been added to the Union and two words have been added to the pledge, under God. Wouldn't it be a shame if this was considered a prayer and it was removed from schools too? And I think that's just very, very powerful and touching.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think, you know, Red really wasn't outwardly political during his career.
Absolutely not.
But this was very subtle, but very poignant.
It was. And he's, you know, he had his, which is one reason, you know, everybody's like, why did he not let his shows go out into repeats? Like, you know, some of the ones from the same time, Andy Griffith or I Love Lucy or some of the mm-hmm. other shows were on at the same time. Red's show was more topical, mm-hmm. somewhat like Saturday Night Live, in mm-hmm. that he had recurring characters who did sketches. He had a monologue at the beginning, but that monologue was topical, mm-hmm. and he felt like it wouldn't necessarily play well mm-hmm. in reruns because people wouldn't know who he was talking about. They wouldn't get the joke mm-hmm. of the day based on things from that time period. And he might be right, but it is fun. It's really fun to go back and hear those mm-hmm. jokes and think about them because, you know, they are often about important events. And though it wasn't political, I think he took stabs at all the politicians.
Oh, he did. He certainly did. Equal there. Now, the Museum of American Comedy. So it's not all just about Red?
Right now, it's pretty much all about Red. Mm-hmm. But it's not just about, it's about his style and about what it is about Red that makes us laugh. And moving forward, you know, that's one of our goals, is to just focus on other comedians that, you know, we can have traveling exhibits from other comedians that maybe exhibit a different type of comedy. Mm-hmm. Still, you know, we still want to stay with the family-friendly right. comedy, mm-hmm. but we, you know, want to bring others in traveling type exhibits.
Well, of course, Red's comedy is I think it's timeless. And of course, you know, now we get the cynical comics and everything, and it's quite blue too. Mm-hmm. But this is comedy that the whole family can enjoy. I remember when I was a kid, like I said, the whole family would gather around the TV set. We could all laugh at this. Nobody would be embarrassed or anything like that. Nobody had to explain later what that meant or anything. It was just a fun time.
It is a fun time. And it's so fun in my job. Like you said, I'm surrounded by these things every day and see all our guests come through. And just to hear people laughing and laughing throughout the museum. And they laugh at different things. You know, everybody finds something different funny. And I love that part of my job where I could just hear people laugh all day long at Red Skelton.
Not a bad gig. Not a bad gig at all. Now, this is a review I saw on TripAdvisor, and this is what someone wrote. For everyone who loves good, clean comedy, you cannot miss with Red Skelton. For years, Red held court on television, bringing his zany brand of family-friendly comedy to millions. Another one writes, as a child, I grew up watching the great comedians on TV, Jack Benny, Lucille Ball, Dick Van Dyke, and Red Skelton. I cannot recommend this museum enough. Go. You will not be disappointed, and may God bless. And that was, of course, Red's famous
sign off,
line
right?
there. Definitely. Mm-hmm. So tell us about Red's final years.
Well, he once his show went off the air in 1971, you know, he wasn't one to, obviously we know that from his prolific painting and writing, and so he hit the road, and he began touring around and doing stand-up comedy shows, and he went all over this country and Canada. He was very, very popular in Canada, did a lot of comedy tours in Canada, and that's really how he spent the years from 1971 until his death in 1984. I think his last show was 1982, maybe 82 or 83. He did his last show, and then he eventually passed away in 1984. Or no, I'm misspeaking. He had passed away in 1997 at the age of 84.
Okay,
1997. So he really toured for 25 mm-hmm. years after his show went off the air. 25 years of being on the road, especially in Las Vegas at the Sands. A lot of time spent in Las Vegas and in Reno.
Now, was it his decision to cancel the show?
It was not. It's like we talked earlier about the turbulent times. Mm-hmm.
Were the ratings falling?
No. He was still in the top 10 rated show when he was taken off the air, but. The way I understand it, and, you know, I was young, I don't really remember, obviously, this too much, but all the sort of wholesome, folksy kind of shows sort of went off the air at the same time, like Green Acres and Andy Griffith's show. They canceled them all around that time, even if they were higher rated. And sort of the more political, edgy, the All in the Family and the Smothers Brothers and those edgier type shows sort of came into popularity. And I think I'm sure Red was a bit bitter, but he moved on. That's what you do. And he was a person who had, I guess, Horatio Alger type, pulled him up by the bootstraps kind of guy. And this wasn't going to get him down either. And he continued on and honestly really started pumping out the paintings. And he made a comment at one time that he probably made more money off his paintings than he did off his TV show.
Really?
He, at one point, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a painting these were going for during the 80s. The heyday was probably the late 80s for his paintings.
Now, where was Red's home?
It was in the mountains outside Palm Desert, California. So in that Palm Springs area, he had a big ranch up in the mountains there in Palm Springs where he lived with Lothian, and that's where he lived.
Now, how did Red die? Did he have a disease or a stroke?
He did not have a disease. It was eventually more of a pneumonia that kind of got into his lungs and that. It was, you know, just kind of a lingering illness that he just couldn't shake. And he did pass away at the hospital there in California.
So where's his grave?
It is in, Glen Oaks. I think there's a big cemetery out in California in that Beverly Hills area. And I think it's called Glen Oaks Cemetery. Mm-hmm. But a lot of celebrities are buried there. And there's a mausoleum, and that's where he is. And I think Richard is in there as well. So,
what was his funeral like? Did other comedians show up?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I know. I really have no idea. I'm sure it was a big deal.
Yeah, that would be a nice research project for somebody.
I know. I know.
He was. They probably signed a ledger.
And we do have that. I know they did some sort of a reception type thing here in Vincennes. And we do have the guest book from here with a lot of the people that came to the memorial type service here. And we have copies of the funeral program or whatever you want to call it. But it was September of 1997 when he did pass away. And
so did Red perform in Vincennes professionally, or did he just make visits in Vincennes? Do you know?
He was good friends with Robert Green, and who owned the Executive Inns, and so he did perform at the one in Owensboro and the one in Evansville several times at those because they had performance type venues. So that's probably about as close as he got, other than the performance I mentioned earlier in 1964 in Vincennes.
You know, there is there probably are several Red Skelton impersonators. There's one at Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
And he comes to Vincennes every year.
Really?
Brian Hoffman and Mrs. Skelton. There was another one earlier that Mrs. Skelton had become personal friends with, and then he unfortunately passed away. And so about 3 years ago, I introduced her to Brian Hoffman, who is the Red Skelton impersonator in Tennessee. And she thought he was fantastic. She really did. And she was, you know, it's hard. I'm sure it's hard to see someone that looks like your late husband and sounds like your late husband. And so she was very nervous, to have to accept this new person. But she felt like he really sort of exhibited Red's spirit. He's such a kind person and so generous of spirit that he is just unbelievable to watch. And he does a really, really good job with the impersonation. And every other year, we have him back to do a big show at the festival time. And so he'll be back next summer in July to do a big show on July 19th for us in Vincennes. So that's always kind of exciting to have a Red Skelton in Vincennes doing a show. But yeah, he is in Pigeon Forge all the time. And if you haven't had a chance and you love Red Skelton, it's a fabulous live performance.
Now, what about young folks? How do you try to get the message across about Red Skelton, the people that the younger generation, why should they know more about Red Skelton?
Well, I just think because he was so multi-talented and because I think it's a lesson of perseverance. You know, maybe you weren't born with everything. You know, maybe you're going to have to work hard. And I think he's one of those examples of if you want it bad enough and you work hard enough, you can get it. You know, I mean, he had to go out and hit the road and really, really, I mean, of course, I'm sure he got some lucky breaks, but he worked his tail off, you know, always, like I talked about, just never rested, always, mm-hmm. always doing something. And maybe if they cancel your TV show, you go out on the road and you work harder at your paintings and promote your paintings. And maybe this is the way then you're going to make your fortune. But I think Red is just such a good example of that. And of course, his humor is funny for everybody. And I think people that haven't heard of Red, once we get him in the door of the museum, they're going to love him and appreciate him. And that's part of our mission, is getting school groups in and getting, you know, grandparents to bring their grandkids in. And by being on the university campus, of course, we've got all those 19, 20-year-olds, and it's mm-hmm. great to see them come through the museum and begin to appreciate Red. So, you know, this is our small way of extending Red's legacy of laughter to a younger generation.
Well, you're kind of an entertainment complex right there where the museum is at on the campus. You have this huge theater right next door to the museum, which is gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. It is just state-of-the-art, a $20 million facility there. And so there's community series shows there, and traveling, you know, acts come in, and of course university performances with their students. And then it's just all those people that come in then can see that we have this museum, whether they're young, whether they're old, and their curiosity can bring them in and they'll learn a little bit about Red.
And you got this great statue of Red Skelton, or a couple of them there.
Right. There are 14 of these statues. It's kind of like in cities where they might have a bowl or a chair, or a Coca-Cola bottle or whatever people mm-hmm. have in their city. We have Red Skeltons. And so we have 14, and they've been painted by various artists, and they're at places around the town. And some are at the museum, like you said. But for the festival, we bring them all back to the museum. And there's a big sculpture out in front of the museum by a university art professor, Bernard Hagedorn, in honor of 9/11. But it's this big circle, and so we put all 14 of these statues around the sculpture. And it's so impressive to see the different artistic styles that all the local artists have done on these statues. But most times you can go find them all around town.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've picked out some quotes from Red Skelton, and there's some good ones here. It says, "All men make mistakes, but married men find out about them sooner."
Absolutely. My husband would agree.
Yes, I think most husbands would agree with that. And Red described Congress as bingo with billions. I like that one. And he had some other great ones, too. I mean, more, poignant. "I personally believe we were put here to build and not to destroy."
Mm-hmm.
That's a good legacy.
That
here.
Is so good.
And then another funny one. "Any kid will run an errand for you if you ask at bedtime."
That is true.
Yes. And then talking about one of his idols, "His death was the first time that Ed Wynn ever made anyone sad."
Yeah.
And if people don't remember Ed Wynn, of course, he was a great comic character, not just on vaudeville, but in the movies, too.
Mm-hmm.
His son became a famous actor, Kenan Wynn.
Ah.
Yes, Kenan Wynn was a great, great dramatic actor. And then Red says, he wants folks to, well, this is what he says. He lives by this credo: have a little laugh at life and look around you for happiness instead of sadness. Laughter has always brought me out of unhappy situations. And as we mentioned earlier, that he did have some unhappy situations, the death of his son.
He did, the death of his son. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, he was married three times. The first time to his business partner, Edna. He was married rather young, probably 17 or 18 years old. He was married, and he was married each time for 15 to 20 years. So he had three long-term marriages. His second wife, Georgia, was a Hollywood like starlet, showgirl type person. And she had long red hair. He called her Little Red and she called him Big Red. And his two children were born with his wife, Georgia. And then after Richard died, I think it was just very, very hard for them. You know, they say things like that in a family can bring people together or tear them apart. And I think for them, it just made it difficult. And so they eventually separated and divorced. And then he did marry Lothian, which has been great for us, obviously, because
sure.
she was young enough that she was able to give us this legacy that we could carry on.
Another quote from Red: "God's children and their happiness are my reasons for being."
That's not one I've heard. That's awesome.
That is good. Anne Pratt, thanks for being my guest and sharing the life, the legacy, and laughter of Red Skelton. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. More great conversations to come on 2 Main Street. We'll find out what treasures are inside the Evansville African American Museum. including the Ron Glass exhibit, highlighting the career of the local actor, famous for his role on TV's long-running sitcom, Barney Miller. And we'll learn about some great historical figures, including Evansville physician George Washington Buckner, who grew up a slave, became a doctor, and a diplomat in the administration of President Woodrow Wilson. And just what was Evansville's role in the Underground Railroad? We'll hear from Vandenberg County historian Stan Schmidt on the county's 200th anniversary and find out who was the county's namesake, Henry Vandenberg. And we'll chat with Kendall Paul, a champion of animal rights who runs the Vandenberg Humane Society. What was her first pet? The strange critters people keep as pets, and her passion to protect all animals, large and small. To Main Street on 88.3 WNIN-FM airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11, and our interviews are also online at WNIN.org. To Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport.